Oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order of presentation, they are as follows. Texas Association of Counties, County Government Risk Management School versus Matagorda County and Keith Kilgore from Matagorda County. Leonel Lopez Sr. and others versus Munoz, Hakima, and Reed and others from Starr County. And Elliott Williams Company versus Manuel and Irma Diaz from El Paso County. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner will be allowed to make a rebuttal argument by reserving a portion of that time to do so, advise the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and complete these arguments before noon. The court is making a tape of these arguments, and you may purchase a copy of the tapes for a nominal fee by applying with the clerk. The court is ready to hear arguments for petitioners in Texas Association of Counties versus Matagorda County.
May it please the court, Mr. E. Stratton Horace, Jr. will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Stratton Horace. I'm a partner in the firm of Wilson, Elster, Moskowitz, Settlement & Dicker out of Dallas. With me is Mr. Price Collins, who is on the briefing in this case. Your Honors, it is my honor and privilege to represent the petitioner in the argument before this court. The petitioner in this case is the Texas Association Counties County Government Risk Management Pool, which I will refer to as TAC or the Pool. We have prepared a series of handouts and blow-ups to aid the court during our presentation this morning. Before I begin into my argument, I'd like to get into a brief synopsis of the facts. I know the court has read the briefs and is prepared. However, I think a brief synopsis of the facts will be in order here. In February 1993, three Kosboom plaintiffs were violently, physically, and sexually assaulted in the Matagorda County Jail. In May of 1993, the Kosboom plaintiffs filed a lawsuit against Matagorda County and the sheriff. TAC informed the county initially that the claims were not covered because of an exclusion that said it excluded claims arising out of the jail. In September of 1993, TAC agreed to pay for the defense of the Kosboom litigation pursuant to a reservation of rights after the county contested the denial of coverage. In January of 1994, TAC filed a declaratory judgment action against the county and the sheriff seeking a declaration of non-coverage because of the jail exclusion. In September of 1995, the Kosboom plaintiffs made a settlement demand to the county and the sheriff in the amount of $300,000. An amount that everyone, including the defense counsel, on behalf of the county and the sheriff, agreed was reasonable.
Even though they agreed it was reasonable, they did not agree to the settlement.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that there was an agreement. There may not have been an express agreement, but as we'll get into later in the argument, there certainly was an implied agreement, as the testimony of Judge Sneary, who actually signed off on the endorsement, will attest to as we go through later. We have blow-ups, in fact, of Judge Sneary's testimony.
Why don't you show it to me right now?
Yes, Your Honor. That would be blow-up number in the back, 17. Justice Abbott, if I may, to back up, to go to blow-up number 16. Blow-up number 16 highlights tax reservation of rights regarding the payment of the $300,000, or actually the proposed payment of the $300,000 settlement. As the blow-up demonstrates, and as the aid that we've handed out to you demonstrates, the reservation of rights is clear and unambiguous.
Okay, no. Let's go to the testimony. Show me where on the testimony it says that the county agreed. And, of course, what the county judge says, are you going to say that what the county judge says in testimony is binding on the whole county?
Yes.
Okay. Assuming that's true, where in there is the county bound by the settlement?
Your Honor, Judge Sneary was the signatory to the exclusion. He signed off on behalf of the county. He was the county's agent for purposes of this particular situation.
Okay. Show me where in the testimony that the county was bound by the settlement.
I don't have that cite here today, Your Honor.
Well, this is the testimony you brought to us right now that you referred to, and in looking at your petition, the only thing you cited in your petition for support that the county agreed to your settlement was this testimony. I want to know anywhere in this testimony where you find that there was an agreement that the county understood and agreed that they were going to be responsible for reimbursing TAC.
Your Honor, if you look at the Reservation of Rights letter, which is Exhibit 50, the Statement of Facts.
Did the county sign and agree to the Reservation of Rights letter?
We don't dispute that, Your Honor, that they did not sign or that they did not expressly agree.
Hold on a second. You're going down the road. I want you to answer one question first.
Sir.
In this testimony, which you put up here now and you put in your brief, show me exactly where it says that the county agrees to reimburse TAC.
Your Honor, it's our position that the county did not have to expressly agree to reimburse.
Okay, so you are saying that the county did not expressly agree to reimburse TAC.
That is correct.
Okay.
And you admit that there are insurance contracts, in fact, a number of them, where the insured agrees to pay a reasonable settlement in these situations. If the insurance company can establish that the payment is reasonable.
That's correct.
Express rather than imply.
That's correct.
So since you could bargain for that type of language, why should we imply that into this arrangement?
Well, Your Honor, there are many reasons for that.
That is your whole argument.
I would like to, yes, I could go into that all right now. I would refer the court, though, to the Bus decision, which is a Supreme Court decision in which a lot of these issues that we're involved in here today were analyzed at great length. Great thought was provided in that opinion. And I believe that the Bus opinion is very instructive on the issues before the court here today. In that particular case, the court stated such a right need not have a locus in a specific provision in a contract for a right of reimbursement. We are going under equitable principles here, Your Honor.
And what should be the parameters? If we agree with you that there could be a right to reimbursement in the face of or settlement cost, not defense cost, but settlement cost, in the face of a reservation of rights letter, what should be the parameters to that right to reimbursement? Under any circumstances, can an insurer recover that?
No, Your Honor, Justice Hankinson. We are saying that under the facts of our specific case, if I could ask Mr. Collins to put up blow-up number four again. Under the facts and the circumstances of our particular case, I think it's very instructive for the court to craft an analysis and a test in under what circumstances reimbursement should be allowed.
And what should that test be?
Let me give the court some comfort. We are not advocating that an insurer should unilaterally be able to pay non-covered claims and then ask for reimbursement back.
Okay, then what should the test be?
In the particular situation of our case, and I would like the court to focus on the facts of our case.
Could I ask you before you get, you said you're relying on equitable principles?
That's correct, Your Honor.
If you rely on equitable principles, does that exclude contractual duty?
No, Your Honor. There's not a
well,
contract.
Why do you have to rely on equitable principles if you're asserting there's a contract?
Yes. There is not a contractual reimbursement right in the coverage document at issue in this court. And again, I would refer the court to the Bus decision, which says that does not have to have a particular locus in a particular written agreement. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The right of reimbursement?
Absolutely, right of reimbursement. The Bus decision involved reimbursement for costs advanced as far as defense costs for non-covered claims. And the Supreme Court in the Bus decision, under equitable principles, similar to what we have here, allowed that recovery of the settlement costs and fees paid for non-covered claims.
Why do you elevate Bus above the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision?
Your Honor, I elevate the Bus. I just disagree with the Massachusetts decision. I think it's not good law. I think the Bus decision is good law. It has been followed by the following Venture decision, which was a case in which settlement funds were advanced and reimbursement was allowed, once again, under equitable principles.
Didn't the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision come out after Bus?
I believe that's correct, but the Venture decision also just came out very recently, and that allowed the settlement cost. There is Texas authority for the provision under federal court law, under the Oryx decision and the Arkwright decision, that allows reimbursement of defense costs and funds paid in settlement for non-covered claims.
Just so it's clear, you're not asking for defense costs here in this court.
That is correct, Your Honor.
You're only asking for settlement payments.
We're not asking for defense costs that were paid to the insurers or the county's
attorney
for the underlying lawsuit. That is correct. We have let that claim go because there's guidance in the Matagorda County opinion from the Court of Appeals that says that situation can be cured in a reservation of rights, but if you are actually going to specifically request reimbursement for those defense costs. And that was an issue with regard to the reservation of rights for the defense costs. We now know that by doing a reservation letter where you specifically say we're reserving the right to go back for defense costs, that will pass muster and will be allowed. The same rationale also applies in the case for reimbursement of settlement funds under the facts of our case.
Can we go back? Can we tell us what the test needs to be?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
While you're doing that, I'm curious as to whether or not would there be a difference in that. How would your argument change if the county in this case had said the settlement amount was unreasonable?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Justice Gonzalez, I...
Would your arguments be different? What would change in your argument if in this case the county had said the settlement amount is unreasonable?
If the settlement amount was unreasonable, once again, if you're going for right to reimbursement of settlement funds advanced, and you're going under equitable principles, the facts and circumstances of each particular case are going to have to be examined. And if an insurance company or the pool, which we say is not an insurance company in this particular case, but it's analogous, advances money that is argued to be unreasonable, then the court's going to have to look at the equities of this particular situation in order to determine why it's claimed to be unreasonable. And the equities, after examining all the facts and circumstances, may not favor reimbursement of settlement funds in that particular case.
But isn't that open a can of worms? I mean, isn't it much easier just to require explicit agreement? Why is that not the easier, cleaner course than trying to look in hindsight and determine what was reasonable?
Justice O'Neill, not to punt on this particular question, but if you look at the Matagorda County Court of Appeals decision on page 784, there is a test followed by the Court of Appeals in that case under the Knapp decision, which is a very favorable case to our position. And that case basically says, as long as there is an implied agreement, as long as there is an express reservation of rights letter that you are going to come back and seek reimbursement for the settlement funds or the costs, then that is sufficient.
But that's not an implied agreement. That's a one-way street.
No, Your Honor, it's not a one-way. Well, reservation of rights letter, Your Honor, is a one-way street. It is a unilateral right to have of the insurance company. That is correct.
So it's not an implied agreement on the part of Matagorda County.
In this particular case, we argue that there is an implied agreement on the part of Matagorda County in the conduct and in the acquiescence, so to speak, of that they accepted these funds. They were unjustly enriched because they accepted funds that were determined that the TAC did not have to pay in the first place.
But again, without having to get back into the facts and what happens in a particular case, wasn't it just easier to adopt a test where it has to be explicit in the agreement itself?
All right. If I may, Justice O'Neill, go back to the specific test or the specific facts of our case that Justice Hankinson's been asked about that I've been trying to get through for
a while. Well, I guess I'm talking about as a policy matter, not the specific facts in our case, which sort of may beg the question, why don't we just adopt the standard that simply requires to be in the agreement?
I would recommend and advocate that we adopt the standard, that the court adopts a standard that is consistent with the reservation of rights letter that an insurance company puts out when it examines a case, when a claim comes in, and the eight-corner rule. It is no different. The rationale is no different with regard to a reservation of rights letter and assuming a defense under reservation to come back later under coverage defenses than it is for the advancement of settlement costs. And I would advocate that is the right test. To require an agreement, the insured just simply has to say, no, I'm not going to agree to it. And what insured is going to agree to it if the insurance company or TAC is forced to pay the money to in the beginning? It can't get reimbursement.
The difference, however, is that under a reservation of rights, you have an obligation, a contractual obligation, to go ahead and continue to provide the defense unless otherwise told. Here you have no contractual obligation and seemingly no contractual right or authority to go ahead and enter into the settlement.
Your Honor, I would I would differ with that.
I think tell me where I can find the authority that allows you to enter into a settlement when you have no contractual obligation for coverage.
Your Honor, as you well know, there's a dispute as to coverage in this particular case.
No, there's not. It's been resolved.
We denied, in the beginning, you don't know that. In the beginning, you don't know that there's going to be judicial determination of coverage by a finder of fact or of law until the end of the coverage situation. You're not going to know early on when these settlement demands come in. There will not be a resolution of the coverage issues if there is, in fact, a good faith dispute. And that is what the court requires, is a good faith belief on the part of the carrier, or in this case, TAC, that the claim is not covered. And you can't do that in the initial part of the case. Oftentimes, these demands come in right in the beginning, or right in the middle of a case, while the coverage situation is still totally unresolved and up in the air. And if I could get to the facts of our case for Justice Hankinson, I apologize. In that particular case, Justice Hankinson, we have a situation where there was a coverage dispute already in existence long before, or I say long, before this settlement demand came in. The coverage dispute was, in fact, the subject of a pending deck action. We believe that TAC was acting very reasonably as a proactive pool in this particular situation. The county was well aware of the coverage situation and the dispute there, too, not only by reservation letter, but by a pending deck action. TAC was, in fact, paying for the county's defense costs at this particular time, again, under a reservation of rights.
You're saying that the county should have sent a letter or communicated to TAC that the settlement amount was unreasonable.
I think the county should have communicated to TAC that they would object to this settlement being paid.
And then by failing to do that, there was an implied agreement to this settlement.
That is correct. That is correct.
Didn't the county communicate to TAC that they were not going to pay the settlement, no way, no how?
That is correct. And they were not going to contribute to the settlement. That is correct.
Why did that constitute statement of their position on their part that they weren't going to agree to having it come out of their pocket?
Justice Abbott, they never came out and said it was unreasonable. They just simply said, we're not going to contribute or help fund the settlement. And they never came out and said it's unreasonable. In fact, to the contrary, the defense counsel stated this is a reasonable settlement. This is a dangerous claim. We have a violent sexual and physical assault in the jail. The damages could be significant.
Okay, but you said defense counsel said that sometimes counsel say things that their clients don't exactly agree with, and maybe that's the situation we have here.
Well, Your Honor, I think if you look at the underlying facts and what happened to the three Coast Boom plaintiffs, you will agree that if there was a finding of liability on the part of the county or the sheriff, the damages would have been significant.
Okay, but Mr. Horace, let me ask a question. First, I'd like you to answer the test that Justice Hankinson's asked you to do. And just the test. What are the elements of the test? And then I have a question for you. I realize your time is up, but answer her question first, and then I've got a question for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would refer the court to the brief filed by the underwriters at Lloyd's as the amicus brief. I do believe they set forth a very good test specifically for following this. But what you have to have is at least a good faith dispute of coverage, as we have in this particular case, not only by reservation letter, but by deck action. A reasonable settlement amount, significant, could cut off exposure, cap exposure. A reservation letter acknowledging, as the court in Matagorda County, the Court of Appeals found in the opinion, that if you can recover your defense costs back, if you reserve the right to do so. And I believe that the same rationale, the same principles apply to trying to get your advancement of settlement funds back. If you reserve your right specifically to do so and put your insured, or in this case, particular case, Matagorda County, on notice that you are going to do so, and then fund the settlement, and it's later determined that you didn't have to fund it to begin with because the claims were not covered to begin with, then you should be entitled to recoup that money back.
But the rest of it, then no consent, no agreement on the part of the insured is required.
Justice Hankinson, again, if the insured objects and makes it known, no, we disagree that this is reasonable. We disagree that this case should be settled.
Right,
then that is a situation that needs to be looked at.
So you have to have notice to the insured, and if the notice, if after notice is given, the insured objects, says it's not reasonable, I'm not going to reimburse for that amount, whatever it may be, then in fact the right to reimbursement does not arise under equitable principle.
I think that, again, goes back to the facts and the circumstances of each individual case, because equity is a situation where you have to look at the facts and circumstances.
Well, I understand, but I'm just trying to understand what the parameters for this are. Basically, then, if that's not the case, then what your position is that an insurer can unilaterally settle a case, and as long as the insurer can show that the settlement is reasonable and that they gave notice via a reservation of rights letter, then they're entitled to reimbursement?
I think that goes too far. I'm not saying
so
that.
I'm just trying to figure out where you land.
I don't
understand. We have the circumstances of this case to look at, but we have to evaluate the circumstances of the case in light of legal principles. I'm trying to understand what legal principles govern.
Well, we're actually under equitable principles, because in this particular case, the county was unjustly enriched because it received a benefit that it was not entitled to.
But if I see a difference in your reservation of rights, your reliance on reservation of rights. Let me see if you can explain why there shouldn't be a difference. If a reservation of rights letter goes out that says, we don't think we have coverage, but we're willing to defend you, reserving our right to contest coverage at the point in time that the judgment would have to be paid and so on and so forth. At that point in time, what I know is that they are offering to defend me, and I'm getting past that hurdle. We're not dealing with the other issue. But for a reservation of rights letter to talk about in here just unilaterally, that I'm going to come after you for settlement, and the insurer is kicking and screaming saying, don't do that, I don't want to pay that amount, why should the insurance company be able to go forward?
They may not be. Under the facts of that particular case that you described, which I dare say is not the facts in our case, under that particular facts of the case, the whatever it might be, the entity that paid the money, may not be entitled to reimbursement.
So if the insured objects or says it's not reasonable, then the insurance company is not entitled to reimbursement.
I believe that, again, not just simply because the insured says that it's unreasonable. I think you have to look at, again, the facts and the circumstances of each particular case.
Well, Mr. Horace, as I understand your argument, it's like a quantum merit. The insured, in this case the county, is aware that the insurance company is undertaking an obligation, doesn't otherwise have to, under circumstances indicating the insurance company may think it's entitled to be reimbursed if it does, and the county does not object to their going ahead and performing this obligation, which is paying on that account. And you're saying under the circumstances of the case, equitable principles would permit the insurance company to seek payment, the pool, to seek payment from the insured. Now, that brings me to my question. The key to your analysis is that under these facts, the county did not object. This is a case where arguably the damages could exceed the insurance coverage. We'll assume that to be the case. There is a hotly contested coverage question. There is a demand made within the amount of insurance. It's a Stowers case. The insurance company now has an obligation not to negligently fail to settle the case within the amount. The insurance company comes with an amount. They think this is reasonable. They think it ought to be settled. They go to the insured and say, we still got this coverage question. By implication, you're going to have to reimburse us unless you object. And the insured says, I object because under my insurance policy, I would not otherwise have to reimburse you. And you're under your theory, then the insurance company probably could not proceed because without this agreement, implied or otherwise, they will have waived their right to reimbursement if there's no coverage.
That is under the Court of Appeals decision. That's true.
After you get to the other end, the insurance company hasn't paid the settlement. There's been an objection by the insured. You get to the other end, it is determined that there is coverage. Can the insurance company claim that Stowers has been waived? In other words, can the insurance company say, wait a minute, we offered to settle within the amount of the proceeds. The insured objected to our settling it. We didn't. We're not liable for the excess verdict.
I think that that's an excellent question, and I think that the insurance company should be able to argue that if, in fact, it is determined to have been a reasonable amount to settle the case for, to get rid of the exposure.
Now, if we are using equitable principles on reimbursement, is that not a policy consideration the court should think about before it says that there can be an implied, that there can be a quantum merit reimbursement question? You understand?
I know what you're saying, Your Honor. I don't think you have to get to that point in this particular case because that is not the facts of this.
Well, I understand, but to your principles, your test, though, if this objection is an element. It's the without objection is that element.
So the question would be is, under the hypothetical that you just mentioned, should that be a consideration for purposes of the equitable principles of this particular, that we're advocating this particular?
I mean, we would be putting an insured in the position of having to object to avoid the equitable principle of reimbursement from applying, but does that not affect our rationale about an insurance company's obligation to settle within policy limits or pay the overage under Stowers?
I don't think you have to get there for purposes of this particular case, because that's simply not what happened in this particular case. Now, that could have happened in this particular case, and that's a danger, because what you're advocating is exactly what may well happen if the court opinion of the Court of Appeals is allowed to stand. Because in that particular case, the insurance company or TAC in this particular case is going to be forced to make a decision without having the benefit of knowing what the coverage issue is going to be, unless it takes a risk at the back end of having to face extra contractual liability, if that makes any sense. Because we're concerned that TAC, the situation could arise if this Court of Appeals opinion is allowed to stand, that the insurance company or TAC will be forced to make that decision at that point in time without having the benefit of knowing whether it's judicial determination of the coverage issues, and then have to face the possibility of extra contractual responsibility on the back end if the insured refuses to agree to settle the case.
Or thank you. Just get it in the agreement.
I'm sorry?
Or just specify it in the agreement.
The agreement between the carrier and the insured up front? I dare say that you're not going to get that agreement because the insured is simply not going to agree to it. Insureds, I believe that the insured should have be put on notice by the carrier, what its intent is, or in this particular case, it was clear that the county was put on notice about the intent, that there was a pending deck action, and that they were going to come back and try to get the coverage on the back end in the case of a judicial termination of non-coverage. They were put on notice. They didn't object to it. Their defense counsel said it was reasonable. And thank goodness, we're here because TAC paid that amount. Because what if TAC, if we put the Court of Appeals opinion in place, and we're deciding, or TAC is deciding based upon that Court of Appeals decision what to do, then TAC, who believes that this claim was not covered to begin with, now must make a decision, well, do I take this to the judicial determination of coverage and not settle the case, in which case they could have decided not to have paid the $300,000 because the county apparently wasn't going to do it. That underlying case does go to trial and continues on. For how long?
And there's one more
question.
And there's a significant judgment. And then,
you're on our time.
One more question. That is, in your pleading, you have no pleading stating a plea for recovery under any equitable theory, correct? You do not identify any equitable theory in your pleadings requesting relief.
Specifically,
correct?
But Your Honor, all you have to do is plead facts. You do not have to plead legal theories.
According to my understanding of the pleadings, the only facts which you pled was a factual request for entitlement to reimbursement. What facts did you plead requesting equitable relief?
We pled facts, Your Honor, of non-coverage, that the payment was made under the reservation to seek a non-coverage, which is in fact what did occur. We pled facts sufficient to put counsel on notice of the what we were seeking, and that is all that is required under Texas law. If you look at Rule 47 of the Texas Practice Civil Remedies Code and other, and you look at the Declaratory Judgments Act, all you have to do is plead facts sufficient to put the other side on notice. And if they don't understand what you're getting at as far as legal theories, then they can specially accept and go to the court, and that did not happen in this case. And we believe that
any
certainly the judgment supports the equitable principles that we're espousing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert E. Allen will present argument from the respondents.
May it please the court. My name is Bob Allen, and together with my co-counsel, Mr. Tom Muir of Bay City, it's our privilege to appear today on behalf of Matagorda County, who is represented by several members of its commissioner's court and interested citizens out in the audience. We start with the proposition that an insurer has no duty to settle a claim that is not covered under its policy. Those are not my words. Those are your words. That's an exact quote taken from this court's unanimous opinion in the landmark case of American Physicians Insurance Exchange versus Garcia.
There's a difference between a duty and a right, isn't there?
Well, yes, there's a difference between a duty and a right, correct. But we start with that proposition, the proposition articulated by this court in an unanimous opinion. The result of that is it compels an affirmance of the judgment in favor of Matagorda County.
What if there is in fact no coverage, but there has not yet been a judicial determination of that, and the insured goes ahead and makes a Stowers demand and says, you settled for $300,000, but I disagree on the coverage issue. We're not going to pay you for reimbursement, but go ahead and settle it because you're obligated under the policy to settle.
So what does the insurance company, what are they obligated to do, assuming that they are correct on the no coverage issue? What should they do?
Well, if they're, in a case like this, and this is what will distinguish this case from the bus case, there's two distinctions between Matagorda and bus. First, bus involves a mixed
I'm not asking about bus. Well, I want my hypothetical answer. What should the insurance company do?
The insurance company at that point in time should decide whether it's going to rely on its exclusion, its nonsensical exclusion, which reads, exclude all claims arising out of jail. And if it feels comfortable with relying on that exclusion, it has every right in the world not to settle the case. There is no
duty. Now, what's its obligation? Does it have the right to? You're saying if it settles, then it's out the settlement amount, even if there's no coverage.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
So
its only choice is to take the case to trial if it truly believes there's no coverage.
That's right. And that's exactly
even if that means extra contractual, even if that means damages far in excess of policy limits.
Well, they've got to decide whether their coverage position is right. And that's why I'm trying to get to BUS, just to distinguish BUS from this case. BUS is a mixed cause of action. In BUS, there were covered claims and non-covered claims, both. BUS also involved defense costs, not a settlement. There's never a situation where an insurance company has the obligation to settle. Take BUS. In BUS, Jerry BUS, the owner of the Lakers, was sued for defamation and then 27 other non-covered claims. TIG, the insurance company, comes in and says, well, we know we have to defend this case because there is one covered claim. As the California Supreme Court says, an insurance company in that situation has a prophylactic duty, not a duty that's in the contract, in the insurance contract, a duty implied by law to defend the entire case. So in that particular situation, the insurance company is defending not as a volunteer, because they have a legal obligation to defend the entire case.
Do you think the court was incorrect on the defense cost? Do you agree with the CA that if the insurance company says, we are going to defend under reservation of rights, but we're putting you on notice that if there is no duty to defend, we're going to seek defense costs from you. Do you agree with the Court of Appeals' resolution of that issue?
I would agree with it in the context of a mixed cause of action. Okay, I think you have to go to BUS and understand the differences between BUS and Matagorda. Matagorda is all or nothing. There's an exclusion that's 18.
What if the exclusion is good, that there's no coverage? Do you agree with the CA that if there's a proper notice given to the insurer, that the insurance company has the right to be reimbursed?
No, I would disagree with that. I would disagree with that for the same reason that BUS disagrees with
it. Why is it that you get defense costs in a mixed cause of action situation, but not where there's clearly no coverage?
Because the insurance company does not defend the non-covered portions of the claims as they volunteer, because they have a legal obligation to defend the entire case. So therefore, they have no choice. If you read BUS, the only parts of reimbursement allowed by the California Supreme Court in BUS is reimbursement for clearly non-covered claims. Clearly non-covered claims.
If we were to hold these claims are clearly non-covered, that you aren't covered, what is wrong with the CA's opinion saying you get defense costs?
Because they are providing that as a volunteer.
So
they have no legal obligation.
You disagree with the CA opinion top to bottom?
Not top to bottom. No, I think the result is perfectly fine. It's the result of the Court of Appeals is a perfectly fine decision. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. For example, okay, go to enrichment. Unjust enrichment. If you go and do the research on what constitutes unjust enrichment, if TAC benefits by its payment, it's not, Matagorda County is not unjustly enriched. TAC has several benefits that it obtained when it settled the Kosaboom situation. A, it knocked off defense costs. It capped defense costs at $70,000. B, the threat was that Kiefer Hardy was going to increase his next settlement demand, and so at $300,000 they capped it off. And see, if it's covered, they do face Stowers exposure. Now, ask yourself why. Why did TAC settle the case? For example, we hear about this hotly disputed coverage action. Do you realize the coverage action was filed in December of 1993? We were served in January of 1994. Duty to defend was the only part of the declaratory judgment action. Eight-corner rule, matter of law. TAC never filed a motion for summary judgment in 18 months. It never filed a motion for summary judgment in the entirety of the whole case. Now, if TAC is really serious about getting this coverage dispute before the court for a resolution, why did they never move for summary judgment on the duty to defend, which is a pure question of law? Look at the exclusion. It's in number 18. Exclude all claims arising out of jail. I scoured the books. TAC has scoured the books. There is not a single exclusion in the history of Texas public jurisprudence as nonsensical
as... But you're not arguing the exclusion in this court. You may have the opportunity to raise that in the CA again, but you're not arguing the validity of the exclusion here.
Well, as I understand it, the case was granted in its entirety with no specificity to any part of it. I had Schering arguing, and that explains everything. That explains all of TAC's conduct in this case. Exclude all claims arising out of jail is meaningless in the context of the way the procedure works. We have a duty to show that the risk is encompassed by the insuring agreement of the law enforcement liability policy. No question. This is the type of claim that's covered under the TAC law enforcement liability policy.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's assume that there is coverage. I'm sorry. Let's assume there is no coverage, as was found below. Help me with understanding the equities of the situation, or perhaps the nonsensicalities of the situation. There was no coverage. You were on the hook, potentially, for $300,000, maybe more, maybe less. You've been relieved from being on that hook. You don't have to pay what was otherwise a reasonable settlement. You've gotten away with $300,000. What's wrong with this picture?
There's nothing wrong with this picture. What gives the insurance company, what gives TAC the right under that scenario, under these facts, an all-or-nothing coverage dispute, a declaratory judgment action that they file in January or December of 93 that they take absolutely no action on, an opportunity comes to settle the case over 18 months later with no declaration by the court whether there's a duty to defend or not,
but
and they
still
come in...
You're still the beneficiary, however, of a settlement that means that you are no longer liable to these plaintiffs.
I think a good...
In a case where there was no coverage.
Well,
assuming that's clear.
And believe me, I do not want to be construed that any exclusion that reads exclude any claims arising out of jail excludes anything.
But assuming there is no coverage, you have been the beneficiary of being completely exonerated from liability. Why should you not have to pay for that?
Okay, I think the words of Fifth Circuit Judge Smith, Jerry Smith, in the Foremost Home case that's 897 F. Second 754, where he says, protecting an insured's interest is insufficient to prevent a volunteer status. When you get right down to it, what we're concentrating on, Justice Abbott, is the unjust portion of the unjust enrichment. And we are not unjustly enriched if TAC gets a benefit from its payment.
What benefit do they get if there is no coverage?
They don't know whether there's no coverage. No fault to us, and all due to their own delay in never seeking a declaration on that. They are quivering, when you get right down to it, they are quivering over a nonsensical exclusion as to whether it applies in this particular situation.
Well, you keep saying it's nonsensical, but if it were as plain as day, you would argue the same rule.
Perhaps not. If it was plainer day, as day, Justice Heck, I think they would not provide us with a defense.
If it was plain as day, and they did, and they paid the settlement offer, you would still say they're
yes,
a volunteer.
You're right there. That's exactly
so
right.
So whether it makes any sense or not, that does not affect your argument as to whether they're a volunteer.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
Mr. Allen, under what circumstances should an insurance company be allowed to recover reimbursement?
I think you could go to BUS and say that in a mixed cause of action where you have part covered and part not covered claims, where the insurance company is not acting as a volunteer, it is legally compelled to provide a defense to the entire case. I think there's a very good argument as put forth by the California Supreme Court. The issue in BUS, although I think as it in another case may come before this case and other cases across the country, is whether an insurance company really does benefit from, because to use your words, we have to apply this with some sort of legal or equitable principle. For example, there are scores and scores and scores of policies that have reimbursement provisions written in them. The Bus case itself was a case where Jerry Bus and TIG entered into an agreement supported by consideration. Did TAC ever come up to us and say, here, we want to reserve this, here is consideration, here is, you know, $25,000, $50,000, we'd like to reserve this longer? No, there's no consideration.
Absent reimbursement provisions in an insurance contract, should equitable principles ever provide the basis for reimbursement of settlement costs?
Inappropriate. And settlement costs, no. I don't think an insurance company is ever compelled to settle a case. It is.
Does your position then put the insurance company in the position of having to go get a final determination?
Well, they certainly could have done it here. Remember,
whether they could or not, I understand there was a contest over whether you were properly notified, and that was a fact issue, and maybe that was going to be a little harder than summary judgment. But in any event, doesn't your argument lead to them really having to go get the deck action determined first?
Yes.
And if that's the case, then what does that do to the public policy of encouraging early settlement?
Well, the public policy completely favors Matagorda in this case. Okay, we talk about early settlements in this situation. All right, remember, the defense costs in the Kozaboom claim were $70,000. TAC submitted a bill for $261,000 to Judge Otis for the fees and the declaratory judgment action. So if we're talking about the relative expenses of the situation...
I don't think you've answered my question. If it does put them in the position of having to push the deck action first, how does that advance the public policy for early settlement?
Well, the public policy for early settlement, what it does is it puts TAC in the position of having to make a decision and not forcing Matagorda to accept what is their problem.
But you see, that's going to be a long road.
There's a lot of public policies that are involved in here, competing perhaps, but what about the public policy that they owe their contractual, common law, and statutory duties to their policyholder? And not to the claimant.
You're again assuming coverage. Let's assume there's no coverage. No coverage whatsoever. They go ahead and defend with the reservation of rights. What's wrong with requiring you to pay a settlement that's reasonable, that you concede is reasonable, and that had you conceded in the first place that there's no coverage, you would have been willing to pay that amount in settlement? What is wrong with that picture?
Because you cannot reach that by applying any legal or equitable principle. You would have to, in essence, create a new rule that is completely different than any type of equitable principle under what would you call it? You couldn't call it quantum merit. This is not an implied in fact contract.
Regardless of what we call it, why isn't that the equitable result?
It's not the equitable result because they benefit from it.
Mr. Allen, let me ask, on that, depending on who benefits from what, the only question, as I understand the way this case has been presented, and I don't think it's in dispute, the only question is the county commissioners thought this was covered, and that was the responsibility of the insurance company. The insurance company said, it's not covered, it's not our responsibility. And the county was facing an exposure. I assume the county thought it was liable for this injury. Otherwise, they would not have agreed to the settlement. So the county accepted that they were responsible for the injuries that occurred. They figured this was going to be significant damages if it went to trial that the county would be liable for. The county has someone who steps forward with funds available to pay. The county thinks ought to pay it anyway, but recognizes that the party that's volunteering this fund may not, in fact, be under the contract required to do so. What is wrong with signing under equitable principles when the county loses fair and square? This insurance company, this risk pool, isn't responsible under the contract to pay for it. What is wrong with the equities that said, well, county, you understood you were responsible, you understood you were liable, you understood these damages could have been high, you thought this was a reasonable settlement. County, you're going to have to pay. I mean, what is wrong with that equitable notion?
It has a nice equitable tone to it. I would agree with that. But that's not the facts of this case, Justice Enoch. And there's nothing in the record that would support what you said at the beginning of the thing. This is what when
you're saying the county didn't think the only fact going on here was whether or not there was coverage.
The county took the position that there was coverage. We have never wavered from day one on this point.
And,
okay,
and
it explains exactly our conduct.
And they don't dispute that they were facing exposure. And when I'm talking about life, I'm talking about the insurance. All the insurance company does is pay for the exposure of the insured. So are you saying the county said we weren't liable for these injuries, that the injuries don't equal what they're demanding to be paid? I mean,
we're not saying that at all. Our position is that this is the reason why we bought this insurance in the first place,
right,
to get protected exactly for this. And TAC, the pros, the people who are the insurance coverage provider in this, the people who are the sophisticated end, we're dealing with an unsophisticated county, we're looking to TAC to do the right thing, as they refer in their marketing materials as our best friend.
Well,
okay?
You said the facts that I had relayed were not the facts of this case.
No, because...
what's the difference?
Well, the difference is you seem to assume that the county was in there saying, TAC, go out and settle the case. Go out and settle the case. The county took the position
I don't assume that. I'm assuming the county recognized it was liable for the damages, and it recognized that it had some exposure here. And it recognized the only issue in this case was whether or not the insurance company was going to step forward and take care of it. And the insurance company argues it doesn't owe. And so all that's left to be talked about. What's wrong with when the insurance company is proved to be correct? The county is proved to be wrong about when the insurance company ought to pay it, but the county accepts that it's responsible. What is wrong with an equitable principle that ultimately says, yes, county, you're responsible?
Because it cannot be supported by express pronouncements from this court. An insurance company has no legal obligation to pay an uncovered claim. The insurance company benefits from the payment of the settlement. They knock off the defense costs. They make sure that it doesn't go higher, and perhaps in some certain circumstances,
they eliminate charges. Anyway. They're not liable for any of that under the facts of this case.
Well, they are under, for example, let's go into the equitable principles, and what you'll find is that is something made as a mistake. Was the payment made by mistake? Because that's where you get restitution a lot of times, if you make a mistake and pay. I'm covering you, and I pay Justice Baker instead by mistake. I'm entitled to get restitution from Justice Baker for a mistake-made payment. Duress, where somebody has duress, is imposing duress onto the person, the payor. That is sometimes viewed as an exception to restitution. But you cannot go, you would have to just completely eviscerate the case law from this court, the whole legal and equitable principles, the foundation of restitution, which incidentally is a good point, Justice Abbott, was never pled. It was never argued. TAC never even argued it until the Court of Appeals by itself raised and rejected them. And I would point the court out to the employers.
Okay. Let me ask you about that, because you claim that they never pled any kind of equitable principles. They claim, well, we didn't, but we did make a claim for relief, and that it was your obligation to file special exceptions to make them more clearly plead. And what's wrong with that argument?
Well, and perhaps that argument prevails, but I would point out to the court Justice Calvert, Chief Justice Calvert's language in the Employers versus Transport case at 444 Southwest 2nd 606 at 610, where somebody tried to, one of the insurance companies tried to advance a subrogation argument without specifically pleading into the pleadings, and Justice Calvert said, you will not be heard about it. The fact that you asked for recoupment in that case was not sufficient to put anybody on notice that you were seeking subrogation. That's Chief Justice Calvert in a Texas Supreme Court case, Employers versus Transport.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Well, I think we heard a lot of things during the my learned opponent's examination and continuing of his presentation. He wants to take parts of Matagorda County, the CA opinion, selectively, and choose the parts that he likes, and he wants to just regard the rest of it. I would refer the court to the CA's discussion of the Knapp case, in that particular case, in the CA opinion. In the Knapp case, it did in fact allow an implied agreement when the reservation letter was clear regarding what the intent of the carrier was. And in that particular case, that reservation specifically said that the carrier was going to try to get its cost back.
But that's not the fact here on the settlement funds, is that correct?
Oh, I think it is, Your Honor. I think the reservation letter is absolutely crystal clear that TAP was going to try to get the reimbursement for the settlement funds paid.
But you just said in the case that you're referring to that it said in the reservation letter they anticipate they wanted their money back. If there's such language in this reservation letter in your case.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It says, and it couldn't be any clearer. It says, TAC has been paying for your defense, this is tab 16, for your defense pending the outcome of the DEC action, declaratory judgment action under reservation of rights. You have chosen not to contribute to the funding of the Coast Boom settlement. TAC is not waiving any of its rights to pursue full recovery of this settlement amount from the county in the declaratory judgment action. This funding should not be construed by anyone as a voluntary payment and is specifically made without tax prejudice to tax rights to recover up to the entire amount as determined in the DEC action. So the letter is crystal clear. It fits squarely within notice to the county here that of its intention to go back and try to recoup it. And with all of that, the county still did not volunteer, did not come up and step to the plate and agree to contribute or fund the settlement.
Even if there had been a crystal clear provision that you would seek reimbursement of settlement if you were required to pay in circumstances like this, wouldn't you be willing to pay something to settle what you know is going to be an extra contractual suit coming from the county?
That may well have been in the cards, and there were discussions along those lines.
Why is the $300,000 basically a settlement of a bad faith suit?
Well, Your Honor, you know, that would be a different situation, but when the coverage is determined in the end that you didn't have to pay it to begin with, then, you know, it's not what it was for.
You don't know when you're sitting there with the settlement offer staring you in the face in the liability suit how the coverage issue is going to get resolved, and this is a way you can resolve the whole thing.
That's right, but that is the scary part about the CA's opinion. It puts insurance companies or government entities like TAC at huge risk. For years, this court has been creating a mountain of good law, trying to create dependability, predictability in this area. And now this takes that away.
Can you get out of that risk?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Can you even get out of that risk? Even if you have a reimbursement provision in your agreement, aren't you still looking at a bad faith suit?
Well, Your Honor, that's the beauty of this case, because the money was paid under that reimbursement request, under the reservation to go back and get it. And that's what should be done. There should be an encouragement to have insurance companies and companies like TAC go out and settle these cases when there's a coverage dispute with the insured, so that the underlying case can be settled. The plaintiff in that case can go on and reserve the coverage dispute to be reserved or resolved at a later date.
Any other questions?